Hello, I'm Joe Mellis, and welcome to episode 89 of Pittodrie PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast featuring not just the Dons first team, but a look across the age groups and genders at the club. And we focus on the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the Northeast local representatives in the Highland League and juniors, and not just football, but any sport making headlines in the Northeast or featuring someone from the Northeast of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Andrew Shiney and Dave McDermott. So here we are recording this on the morning of Tuesday, August 29th, 2023, looking back on both the European match against BK Hacking and the Scottish Premiership match away to St Mirren on Sunday. Shall we do it in chronological order and start in Sweden? That one, as you know, finished 2-2, some second half. Your thoughts on that one, Andrew?
Yeah, as you say, some second half. In fact, a very entertaining game from start to finish, a bit more like basketball than football. 18 shots at goal, I think, from Hacking, 17 from Aberdeen. I did text Dave through it and said, this game is ridiculously open. Usually, you think of first legs, particularly away legs in Europe, keep it tight, let's make sure we don't lose. But Aberdeen went at it, and I thought they were doing quite well. And then, you know, the style of football Barry wants them to play is high risk, high reward. The risk was shown when Hacking got their opening goal, because suddenly a quick break and it was 4-2, and they took full advantage, and the guy Layuni scored a good goal. So 1-0 down at half-time, you're thinking, well, still we've created a few chances. Bajowski, Polvara had chances. Second half, we then had that ridiculous penalty. I mean, there's just no way of describing it other than ridiculous. How a referee can watch replays about a dozen times before he can make a decision, there has to be an element of doubt in his head. If there's doubt, you don't give the penalty. Simple as that. I mean, when you watch it from the alternative view, which Richard Early, the Dons videographer, had done, you see the ball come into the box. The referee has a completely unimpeded view of what's going on. The ball ricochets about. He throws his arms out to say, nothing to see here. And then next thing you know, he's being asked by his video assistant referee to come and have a look. Then you get the shot of the ball coming across. There's no definitive view there that shows the ball actually striking Jack McKenzie. As I say, you saw the sort of front-on view. Then you saw the side-on view that showed absolutely nothing other than a melee of bodies. And so you couldn't tell anything from that. There just wasn't sufficient evidence there for me as a referee to say that is a penalty kick. I think what's happened is the video assistant referee has said, look, I really think there's something happened in there. You're going to have to give a penalty there. Now, the referee hasn't been strong enough in his own convictions to say, look, I'm the man in the ground. I'm the man in charge. I didn't see anything in real time. I don't see anything having watched a dozen replays in slow motion time. No, I'm not giving the penalty. But he's bowed down to the pressure. He's given the penalty, which Sadiq scored. Sadiq, incidentally, very, very good. There was a rumour that he was going to be moving to Holland over the weekend. Sadly, that hasn't happened as yet, but there's still time before Thursday. At 2-0 down, all of a sudden, you're then thinking, we cannot afford to lose the next goal in this game. And Hacking had a wee spell without seriously threatening to get that third goal. But then once we got one back, all of a sudden, the switch was flipped completely. And, you know, Aberdeen totally dominated from the time that Bajowski got the first one back. It's a great goal, the second goal. You look at it from where Jack McKenzie, who I thought was excellent throughout, wins a challenge with Sadiq, plays the ball forward, Bajowski knocks it inside, Clarkson plays it back to Bajowski. Bajowski times the pass perfectly, and there is Nicky Devlin, of all people, absolutely bursting a gut to get into the box and finish it off. And then, you know, there was the Jamie McGrath goal that wasn't, I think it was correctly disallowed for offside, but it just showed that all of a sudden, Aberdeen were totally on top in that game. And as Barry said afterwards, they could have scored 5 or 6. Equally, they could have conceded 4 or 5. So it sets it up very nicely for the second leg. But there was so many positives to take from that, which excited everyone. only for that to be deflated come Sunday. But as you say, we'll talk about that later. But no, I thought it was a very impressive first showing, given the fact that no fewer than 11 players made European debuts for Aberdeen, or first appearances in European football at all. Then you had two more, Clarkson and McGrath, making their first Aberdeen starts in Europe. Out of 15 players, only Jack McKenzie and Graham Shinney had previously represented the club in Europe. And it was also Barry's first game as a manager in European football. So it was all very new to them. Something that Barry touched upon after the St Mirren game. But for a debut, it was a very, very good opening show.
Yeah, and but for a rule that goes, you say we'd come back with a win, Dave, but luck wasn't with us. As it turned out, we needed to carry all that luck for the week for the St Mirren match at Paisley, but we'll come to that. I thought Bojan Miowski was excellent on the night, and the goal he actually ended up scoring was way more difficult than some of the chances he missed, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Just saying, talking of Sadiq, I was reading this morning, he had his medical in Holland yesterday, but he's planning to go back to play on Thursday for Haken. Now, if I was about to sign him and he had his medical, I would be not really wanting that to happen. So, as Andrew touched on, there's still 4 days between now and the match, so we'll see. But yeah, Miowski, he's looking good, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
This early in the season, he took his goal very well indeed. And as you say, there were chances that were easier that he didn't manage to find a net. But now he's certainly looking to carry on from where he left off at the end of last season.
And as for the equaliser, Andrew, Nicky Devlin's finish, William Miowski would have been proud of that, wouldn't he?
Any striker would have been proud of that finish, John. And as I say, he absolutely burst himself to get there into the box. Great first touch. And then the coolness to just dink it over the goalkeeper. Somebody was suggesting it was very similar to a Hans Hillhouse goal. Now, if Nicky Devlin can strike as well as Hans Hillhouse did throughout his career,
and as often.
And as often, what a player we've got in our right back. But I thought it epitomised the spirit, the determination, the character of the side that Devlin got himself forward there. Because, they'd been under the cosh a little bit, but having got themselves back into the game, they were determined that they were going to get something out of it. It's what Barry Robson said. If you're in a game that you can't win, make sure you don't lose it. We've seen that twice. So it's a good sign. I know performance levels, etc., on Sunday were absolutely diabolical, but they got a point, which we've seen many, many occasions where the side has played better and not picked up anything. So you could argue it's clutching at straws, but it's a positive sign that there is an intent, a desire amongst that squad that augurs well for the season ahead.
I may well argue at the end of the season, well, that was a big point in Paisley that day, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
The new starts back on Thursday night, Dave, we'd mentioned that the Celtic game, Barry doesn't seem to be all that keen on making subs. He did in the Haken game, both McGrath and McGarry involved, and they made a difference, didn't they?
Yeah, they both look good. And I must admit, I'm pretty impressed with the additions that the Dons have made over the summer. And McGrath and McGarry, given the circumstances, they did make a difference when they came on, and both looked very calm and collected. We know Jim McGrath from his time in Scottish football, obviously, but McGarry looked a player as well. So, and then when we talk about Sunday, Jensen looked very good when in a day that was more to forget than try and remember, if we're perfectly honest. But on Thursday, McGrath, McGarry, great substitutions. And I think, I'm not sure, I think once the squad gets bigger, I think but we'll see more subs happening, because I think Barry will be more confident with the players he's got on the bench, because the bench on Sunday looked a very strong bench. Even stronger than the bench on Thursday evening. So it's hopefully all good, but we still probably would love to see another couple come in the door between now and the close of the window later this week.
Well, I'd like to thank Pitotri for giving us a signing that we can mention in the podcast this early in the week, and we'll come on to that in just a minute. Finally, poised the return on Thursday. Now, we won't do a score predictor just yet. I think we'll get both together after we review the St Mirren game, which we'll get on to just now. They've been going well, St Mirren. 2 from 2 coming into this one, a win in this match, and they go top of the league. The Don's travelling more than quite a few salesmen right now, and they better get used to it because it's going to stay that way until at least Christmas. The game finished St Mirren 2, Aberdeen 2, somehow. Andrew, it was a Dick Turpin-esque performance. What was your take on this one?
Glad to get out of Paisley with a point, I think it would be the bottom line of that one. They just never got going, did they? Right from the off, St Mirren were in Aberdeen's faces, played to their strengths, which, you know, to be fair to them, they've got a very well-organised squad. They've got a bit of pace about them, a bit of guile. They were missing their captain, Mark O'Hara, who is one of their most influential players. So I thought it was a really impressive performance. And again, augurs well for the rest of the season. You'll find that a lot of teams will find it extremely difficult to take points from Paisley this season because St Mirren have got a bit of the Aberdeen spirit about them. They all fight for each other. They work hard. It was, you know, somebody said it was the old John McMaster Gordon Strachan free kick routine from the Bayern Munich game revisited for Johnny Hayes' goal. I mean, when Zach Hemming looks back in that, he must be wondering, why did I not just move half a yard to my right and I could have caught that ball easily? Instead of which, I think he and the defender both left it to each other, and of course it drops into the back of the net. So completely undeserved lead for Aberdeen. Then we had the goal that was disallowed that nobody seemed to know what it was for. I think on reviewing it, I think I now know what it was for. Dave and I were discussing what it was. We thought it might have been a handball, but I didn't think it was handball. I thought there was a foul in Jack McKenzie in the build-up. It wasn't that. It was actually an offside.
An offside in the build-up rather than
in the build-up, yeah. Which, again, it's right in front of the assistant referee and he doesn't stick his flag up. Now, I know that they don't put their flags up until, you know, 10 minutes after the incident nowadays. Instead of the way it used to be, you're offside, bang, up goes the flag. They wait till everything plays out. But he should have had his flag up at some point in that move. But Aberdeen got off the hook there. They then concede the penalty, which was a penalty. Angus McDonald was patting his chest. Not quite as blatantly as Alex Gogic did later on in the game, but he lifts his shirt, lifts his GPS vest to say, it hit me right up there, when everybody in the ground could see it hit his right forearm. But the second goal was worrying because, again, it's, you know, the high press, it got caught out because we lost the ball from our free kick in the St Mirren penalty area. Mandron runs 70 yards, plays it inside. Leave, but it was Leighton Clarkson who was playing him onside. Now, had he just looked along the line and held his defensive run a second, half a second, Grieve would have been offside, but he's not a defender, so not going to blame him for that. But the penalty was a penalty. Again, you have to ask, why did John Beaton have to look at it so many times? The first viewing, you can see it's hit his forearm. His forearm is up away from his body. So it's an unnatural position. The only other thing he had to check was it inside the penalty area? Was it not? He gets an 18-yard line view. It's clearly inside. That VAR decision should have taken about 10 seconds instead of about 2 minutes. And then there's all the hullabaloo, which is still going on. Did Boyan kick the ball off his right foot and into the back of the net? There's various different camera angles that I've seen. There is one that seems very clear that he doesn't. When it's a double hit, it tends to go flying out at a strange angle. Now, you could argue Boyan sticks his penalties into a corner normally, but this one, I think he just thought taking no chances. Or maybe Craig Sampson has told him, look, Zach Hemmings always commits himself left or right, so smash it down the middle. Whatever. The goal stood, we got a point, and you get out of Dodge and thank your lucky stars that you're not riddled full of bullet holes.
Maybe point of thought. I tell you what, I'm going to make sure of this. I'm going to flick it up with my left and then hit it with my right. Dave, we travelled to Sweden, played a decent match, second half especially, travelled to Paisley, played a bit of a howler. We have a lot of new players. St Mirren are going well. We're going to be playing more matches until at least Christmas. All of these things can contribute to malaise. There's probably even more than that that you could throw into the mix. But even allowing for all that, Sunday, the one good thing is that we hung in, right?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, as we've already touched on, we rode our luck big style. I think the only thing, you know, the comforting thing is nobody already, you know, at this early stage has got maximum points. Everybody's dropped points, which must be the earliest that every team in Scotland has dropped points in the top flight for a good number of seasons. I don't know if Andrew's got that one on the tip of his fingers.
No, I don't, but I'd agree with you. Hibs are wishing they could have a point.
Yeah, but, you know, and St Johnstone's draw at Celtic was probably even more surprising than the Aberdeen game. But, no, we hung in and we got an undeserved point, it must be said. But, you know, we're sitting better off than it looked going into stoppage time, because I had a wee look at the moving league table and I'm thinking, crikey, we're right down.
Yeah, we're in a relegation spot, yeah.
Yeah, so we're slightly better off now, but already we're seeing, you know, Hibs are right down at the bottom. Hearts are not firing in all cylinders yet. They've got the same problem as Aberdeen playing Thursday, Sunday, although I don't think it'll be for much longer. But and you know, Rangers losing on the opening day at Kilmarnock and Celtic dropping points and not looking particularly, you know, particularly good. So, you know, there's teams are still getting into their strides for this season, and there'll still be a lot of signings to come in all the clubs between now and the window closing. So, certainly not the time for doing anything like panicking. Win on Thursday, win on Sunday, and the garden will be more than rosy once again.
Yes, no doubt. A couple of things to pick you up on there. Just to give Andrew the required, you know, amount of time for him to look up, has the league ever gone like this early? Have Hibs ever Hibs'd it this early, Andrew, as well? You can check up on that one, please. But yeah, the window won't be closing, Dave. As you know, traditionally, the window will be slamming shut. How does it go from some of the stuff we saw on Thursday night to that display on Sunday, Andrew? Is it just tiredness? Is that it?
I mentioned how many players had made their first starts in Europe. It's very different. As Barry said, you've gone from playing on a dreadful pitch at Livingston against a very physical team, to then playing the champions, to then going to Stirling Albion. Again, the pitch was a bit sticky against a very well-organised side. Going to Europe, artificial pitch once again, against a European side who play a totally different style to what many Scottish sides do. It's all a big learning curve, not just for Barry and his coaching staff, for getting to know the players, for the players to get to know Barry, to get to know the style that he wants to play. As Dave said, it's too early to be, you know, pressing any panic buttons. There's a lot of gelling has to be done, both in terms of interpersonal relationships between players, getting to know each other. I mean, there'll be some clubs where, you know, they turn up on a Saturday and they go, "That's the boy in the corner. Well, that's your new striker. What's his name? I can't remember because we've signed so many in the last little while." So, you know,
we're just calling him Pappy.
Exactly. Well, we've bought another striker this morning. Pappy Habib Gay, Guye. We'll work out and find out how it's pronounced before Sunday.
John. Well, if Luis Lopez can just go with Duke, can we just get him to go with Pappy?
Yeah, exactly.
That'll do for us.
We'll do nicely.
Seeing as how you brought him up, Andrew, do we know much about him?
Well, he played for Ålesund in Norway. Which everyone knows is Peterhead's twin town, just north of a place called Ulsteinvik, where I went on a holiday in 1974, I think it was.
Where's it twinned with? Balmain? No, never mind.
Probably. But looking at his record, 79 starts, 41 goals. So 6'2" striker. a much more physical specimen than we've got up front. So it's maybe a horses for courses signing for Barry. Unfortunately, obviously, he's not going to be able to feature on Thursday night because he's signed too late for the UEFA deadline. But he may make an appearance on Sunday, whether it's to be introduced to the crowd or playing some part on the pitch against Hibs, I'm not sure. But he has signed. I think he came from Kortrijk in Belgium, where he played for a few, three seasons, I think. So an interesting one. A different type of player to what we've had.
Is he what we might traditionally call a big lamppost of a player, Andrew?
The big brick outhouse type of player. Yes. we'll see whether. You hope that he's got a touch, because sometimes you've seen some of these big guys whose first touch was followed by a blocked tackle 20 yards away because they couldn't trap a bag of cement. But I'm quite sure that Barry has done his homework on him. So we'll see when we do get to see him. But to get back to what you were asking, how does it go from Thursday to Sunday? There's a lot of travelling involved, both flying home from Gothenburg to Aberdeen. They would have had probably a rest and not so much relaxation, but rehabilitation session on Friday. Probably trained Saturday afternoon, drove down to Paisley. You're not sleeping in your own bed. There's so many things that are disrupting your normal kind of routine. And as you say, it's something that players will have to get used to, because it's going to happen a lot between now and Christmas. But for somebody to say, how do you get tired playing football? Well, of course you do. It was a high energy game on Thursday night. There was a lot of chasing about had to be done on an artificial surface, which is pretty hard on you. I think there's a lot of things that can be taken into account, but as the players themselves said, we've got to be better. So
yeah,
they know what's
needed. If we were looking at this as a another club looking in, or say this was us looking at Hearts, we would probably turn around and say, yeah, that's a bit of straw clutching going on there. All those things you just mentioned. Did we just draw a line under it with work in process, bad day at the office, number of matches, travelling, new team gelling, big learning curve, plays without pre-season, and whatever else springs to mind, just throw into the mixer and keep watching over the season as the picture develops, Dave?
Knowing Barry, I think he'll learn from it and take things that we have to do better from it, which will make sure that the players and the club do get used to playing the Thursday Sunday regularly, because we obviously hadn't quite learned from Hearts last year, because they went through exactly the same, trying to fight on two fronts, and we said all the right things in advance, but obviously Sunday's performance showed that something wasn't quite right. So I think I would be surprised if we didn't. I would be very surprised if we put up another Sunday performance like that. Barry's always learning.
Having said, we thought that we'd learn from Hearts' example last year. It looks like Hearts haven't learned from Hearts' example last year so far. I suppose when it comes to the Hibs match on the weekend, our next league game, the consoling thing is they should be at least as knackered as we might be feeling, given that they're on a similar schedule right now. And they've sacked a manager. They're the prime candidates for basket case club of the moment. And thank goodness for that. Hibs, one of the clubs who dished out an absolute mauling to us when we were going through our worst period last season. That fixture at Easter Road was when Jim Goodwin got the sack and left walking away across the pitch and over the barrier, a bit like David Banner walking off at the end of an episode of The Incredible Hulk. I'd hoped we'd be in a position to sort of return the compliment if they found themselves in a similar situation. And here it is. But the thing is, even if we get a good result against Taken, Andrew, you can't assume anything given that sort of Jekyll and Hyde run of these last two games, can you?
Jekyll and Hyde from us, maybe, but consistently inconsistent from Hibs. So, it's a difficult one to call, but I think home advantage and Bride and Aberdeen are coming off the back of a good result against Haken. You can go into it with a large dollop of confidence, because I think Hibs really are struggling just now. They can't defend. We've seen that, just about every game we've seen them. They still do have attacking threats, particularly in Martin Boyle. who need to be looked after, but they're in a bit of a mess on and off the field at the moment. So I'm not saying Aberdeen will go and gub them 6-0 like they did to us down at Easter Road, but I would think that Aberdeen should be too strong for Hibs come Sunday. But it's interesting, there's the three sides that played early on in the latter stages of the week in Europe, Hibs, Hearts and Aberdeen, all, you know, didn't get the results they would expect. Hibs, you know, losing to Livingston, Hearts losing at Dundee, but we at least got that draw at St Mirren. I noticed Haken, they got beaten 4-2 by IFK Gothenburg. Yeah. They were 4-0 down in 53 minutes in that game, and IFK Gothenburg were third bottom of the Swedish league going into that match. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to take into account when you're playing this Thursday-Sunday schedule, but I fancy Aberdeen to bounce back. And being at home, again, getting into some sort of normal routine off the pitch will help everyone. So fingers crossed that everything goes well this weekend and it's smiley faces, smiley voices that you're hearing next week.
Yeah, played 3, drawn 2, lost 1, so far as the league goes. I would have had, it's probably best case scenario, between 7 and 9 points, worst maybe 2. I know it's early. I know we've got a lot of new players. Every team has to gel, all of that. Too soon to panic. But if you're Barry Robson and you're on this learning curve, what do you do, Dave? Keep switching your defence around? Try to find a winning combination? Or do you show faith in a lineup and stay with it? Try and coach them to be better? Do you stick or twist, Dave?
I think Barry will stick, but because just, again, you know, from knowing him. The point I made earlier that once the signings have all been completed does, I believe, mean that there will be more perhaps changing things, as we mentioned earlier, horses for courses, depending on who we're playing against, and with the new striker, you know, giving a different kind of option as well. As far as defence goes, I think once Rhys Williams gets himself fit, we might see a more settled central defensive partnership. Angus McDonald will be there, but at the moment it's changing a wee bit. You know, we know Barry plays quite a lot with the back three. Whether that will change or not, we'll just have to wait and see. But it's a difficult one. Who knows? And obviously, results will dictate the speed of any changes, but I certainly don't think that Barry will be anything other than just concentrating on getting the win that we need on Thursday night and then turning his attention to doing the same to Hibs on Sunday.
Hibs without a manager, no wins in the league, a 5-0 thumping at home to Villa. We're recording this on Tuesday, but you can't imagine things going too much better away from home in the second leg. I think their best hope is they go down there, Villa field with second string or maybe the under-14s, and Hibs managed to turn a morale-boosting closer defeat as a potential springboard coming into the match on Sunday. And they take some confidence from that. But you'd hope the Dons have enough to see off Hibs, wouldn't you, Andrew? I mean, a cliche, certainly, but given their fragility, first goal on that one's going to be hugely important, isn't it?
It will be. If Aberdeen get the first goal, and you'd anticipate there being a big crowd at Pittodrie backing the Dons, that swell from the crowd can drive Aberdeen forward and make anybody who feels the least bit tired after Thursday forget any fatigue. So, first goal is very important. So Aberdeen need to start the game in the front foot. And, you know, if they can get Hibs under the cosh, just keep the foot down there. And there'll be some of the players there that remember that 6-0 and will want to avenge that. A good start and Aberdeen can go and win handsomely.
Well, let's hope it's a decent battering. Let's look at the next couple of games then and do the score predictors together. Thursday evening first, in front of a full house for the return leg against Haken. We're in a good position after that first leg, Dave. I wonder if this game will be as open as the previous one. How do you see the home tie going? Aberdeen versus BK Haken?
I think Aberdeen, with the full house behind them, the vast majority behind them, I think Aberdeen will win relatively comfortably. So I'm going to go for 2-0 Aberdeen.
Andrew?
I'm going to go one better, 3-0 to the Dons.
Well, I feel a Copenhagen-esque performance coming on. I'm going to say 4.
Who's got the Jamie Smith role then?
Leighton, definitely. And then on Sunday, the Premiership tie will be against Hibs at Pittodrie, who hopefully will be more knackered than us. Aberdeen versus Hibs. Andrew?
I can see there being quite a number of goals in this one as well. I'll go 4-1 Aberdeen, same as it was first time around last season.
And Dave?
A lot will depend if Hibs manage to get a quick appointment, but their recent history in management appointments would indicate they should really take their time. if that hasn't happened and it's still the same with David Gray in interim charge, I think 3-0 Aberdeen.
Yeah, I agree. I concur. In terms of who they might get for manager, I mean, Stephen Robinson would seem to be a sensible punt, but do you think there's any chance of them doing that? Either of you?
There's been a couple of mentions of Graham Arnold and Nick Montgomery from Australia. Derek McInnes' name obviously popped up. Stephen Robinson. Yes, to be honest, I think Stephen Robinson has done a tremendous job down there at St Mirren, and it would be a big step up for him to go to Hibs. Whether he'd want to go to a club that looks to be in disarray when the window is going to be closing tomorrow night, or on Thursday night, slamming shut, as Jim White would tell us, it doesn't give you a lot of time to change around personnel. And it's players in the park that do you in or do you proud. So I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest, who they're going to go for.
I also think, I mean, why would Derek, having just signed a new contract at Kilmarnock, having got off to a great start this season, Saturday aside, why? I mean, if you think back to 2017 when he was swithering about whether he was going to Rangers, the state of the club is going to play a part. And
or even Sunderland, it was the same situation, yeah, wasn't it?
Exactly. I'm not sure that Derek would want to go into the absolute higgledy-piggledy thing that is Easter Road just now. So I think even if they wanted Derek, I'm not sure that Derek would necessarily want to move from what he's got a very safe and job that, and he's already been quoted as saying he wants to win cups and trophies with Kilmarnock.
Yeah, and equally, I think if a decent move came from England, he'd probably be off at Christmas time, but we'll see. Just before we move on to under-18s, let's look very briefly at the transfer window. Do you think that's all our business done in terms of, you know, players that potentially might be coming in, Andrew?
Well, that's 12 in. So it's not a bottomless pit of money that Dave Cormack has. So
well, it is. It's just what he's prepared to spend.
Okay. You're angling for an increase for your PA announcing or something. listen, Dave, I know you've got a bottomless pit. Come on, give me another 20 pence. There's only so many that you can bring in because, you know, you've got to fit them in. That's 12 players brought in. You can only field 11 at a time.
Let's look the other way. You might think some fringe players would go out then, possibly,
some, I think, might go out on loan. There's a new striker come in. We've got 4 strikers in the books. Is Alfie Bavage going to be loaned out to somebody to, give him game time first and foremost, but to boost his experience playing against men as opposed to playing under 18 football, which he's still eligible to do. Not a lot of time before the window closes, so I'm sure there will be things going on in the background that we don't know about that will happen over the next couple of days. So I don't really foresee there being many more incomings, and I hope that there's no outgoings. I know that Southampton have been linked with Bojan Miovski, but the club have said they've had no contact from them. So I think as one of the prime assets at Pittodrie at the moment, you're not looking to lose your top scorer. So fingers crossed that there's nobody going out.
Although I think Anthony Stewart will go out, and I wouldn't be surprised if Vinny goes to another club either.
True, yeah.
Yeah. As far as Bojan Miloski is concerned, I'm with Steve Tosh. No man takes Bojan. Right, let's move on to the under-18s next. The SPFL Trust Trophy after losing to Peterhead and still undefeated in the league. Up until Friday, the senior side faced St Mirren away and sort of the under-18s. This fixture last season, was this not the one that threw up a 9-0 for the Dons at home, though, I think, wasn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, they did beat St Mirren 9-0 at home. They scored barrel loads of goals against a very weakened St Mirren side last season, who are now a year older, a year stronger. And it showed on Friday down at Ralston as St Mirren ran out 4-2 winners. Wow. 2-2 at half-time, Aberdeen goals from Fletcher Boyd and Alfie Stewart, but they conceded two in the second half to bow out. But looking at the under-18s league table, there are no unbeaten teams there, so it just shows that everybody's capable of beating everybody else. Never more graphically typified by Hibs. How often have they popped up in this podcast this week? They lost 6-4 at home to Queen's Park, who have just come into the league. They followed that up with a 5-0 win at home against Celtic. So, you know, anything can happen in the under-18s. The boys are scheduled to play Hearts at home on Friday, but I haven't seen any confirmation of that game yet. And with the European tie on Thursday night, there's a slight possibility that that game has been maybe held back until later in the season. But for those who follow the under-18s, keep your eyes on the club website. That'll keep you up to date as to when they're playing next. But it's been a wee bit of an iffy start to the season for the boys, but long, long way still to go.
Aberdeen women had been going quite well until their previous game, a 5-1 defeat away to Rangers, which, given previous encounters, they may have been expecting. The important message here was not to let that one result derail the progress they've been making as they moved into a week with games against Montrose at Lynx Park, followed by Hearts at Balmoral on the Sunday. Montrose was a hard-fought 2-1 win. Hearts ended 2-0 for the visitors. Given their recent improvements, they'll be disappointed in that Sunday result, Dave.
Yeah, they will be. But, you know, looking at league tables, they've made a reasonable start to the competition. But, I mean, again, it's the haves and have-nots in that league because you've got the full-time teams that, you know, there was Celtic 9, Dundee United 0. That's a familiar scoreline. But the women repeated it this time at the weekend. Glasgow City and Rangers, they drew. So you've got the three big teams up top. Hearts are not bad. Hibs are not bad. But then the rest, Spartans look as though they've improved a wee bit over the summer. But Dons are still, you know, in a reasonable place. So they will be disappointed at going down at home to Hearts. Probably that awful Hearts pink away kit that both their men's and women's teams were wearing this weekend. Good grief. They'll be disappointed, but not too downbeat because reasonable start to the season.
Yeah, you mentioned Spartans women looking like they'd improved this next week. We've only got the one game. It's away to Spartans. How do you see that going?
It's going to be difficult, to be perfectly honest. I think if Aberdeen were to get a share of the spoils, they'll be reasonably happy. So I'll go for 2-2.
On to Cove Rangers, who were off and running with a fine 3-0 away win at Montrose last time out. You got the feeling perhaps that was a corner being turned. This weekend, they were back at home to play Queen of the South, which ended 2-1 for the visitors. Speaking afterwards, manager Paul Hartley.
Didn't get off to the ideal start. And then I thought we were okay in the first half for about 40 minutes. Made some opportunities. We just maybe rushed things. And then we concede a goal just before half-time. So we lose a goal in the first minute or two. And then we concede a minute before the half time, which is no ideal, so it gives him a lot of confidence. Thought the second half we huffed and puffed a little bit. Didn't they test the keeper enough? I mean, they went a man down, we just didn't do enough to win it, to be honest with you. We looked sort of relied on a throw and get into the box, never worked our keeper enough. It was too easy for them to defend.
Plenty of possession in that second half, but as you say, no end product.
But doesn't he win you games? Possession is what you do with the ball, and we didn't move it quick enough. We didn't cause him enough problems, to be honest with you.
And your thoughts on the sending off right at the end there?
Simulation, innit? So it's not good enough for a player that Will's sort of he's experienced enough. He's not a young kid. So, you know, we're a man down for next week. So that's out of order, that, to be honest with you. That's not acceptable, not good enough.
and looking ahead to next week, obviously it's still early in the season and back to your old club, Alloa Athletic.
Yeah, but we've got to be better. That's the big thing. We need to be better throughout the team, throughout the game. We have to do things better, we have to defend better, we have to attack better. So we need to wake up. You know, it's a tough league this if you're not winning.
You're still without key players. What's the latest in the injuries?
Fivey's just took a wee not a setback last week. Blair, hopefully, is not too far away, but we've still got a strong enough squad, but we didn't do enough, did we?
He's clearly disappointed after last week's fine win, Dave. It sounds like they weren't really at it. It's the lack of consistency that'll be frustrating him, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty poor performance all round. No pace about Cove. I mean, it's... Paul McGowan, obviously, is in the twilight of his career and is very, very good at finding opposition. But he's not going to speed the game up for you. And it was pace that caught Cove out within the first couple of minutes when Harvey Walker, the left wing back of Queens, outpaced the home defence and hit a good shot away. So, and then the free kick from Regan Mimnaw, who was touted when he was at Hamilton as being the next big thing. And he certainly showed that he's got a bit of skill about him with the way he finished the free kick. And the goals were either at the beginning or the end of halves. We could have just ignored the bit in the middle because the last kick of the game, Tyler Makita scored almost an identical free kick at the same end as Mimnaw had done at the end of the first half to get Cove, make the scoreline a bit more respectable. But it was a poor, poor performance. And they... You know, obviously speaking to Paul afterwards, he was just completely frustrated. You know, I mentioned to him of possession. Possession doesn't win you games, you know, and it's what you do with the ball. And unfortunately, we didn't do enough with the ball. And even though we still, you know, Cove had Fraser Fivey still out, Blair Yule, big players, as Paul rightly said, they had a big enough and good enough squad to be able to deal with that, and they should have done better.
At Cove's next game, away to Alloa Athletic. Now, last time they were in this league, was it Alloa that were up there fighting with them most of the way, wasn't it? You'd expect this to be tough.
Yeah, obviously it's a club that Paul knows very well from his time there. But yeah, he'll be looking for a switch back to the performance down at Montrose a couple of weeks ago, where speaking to the guys, it was a real, out of the blue performance in a positive way. And that's why Saturday's showing against Queen of the South was so disappointing, because you know it did smack of a side that's not consistent, and that's not what Paul wants. And if you remember the last time they were in League One, Balmoral was almost impenetrable for the opposition, but it didn't prove that way on Saturday, so disappointing.
For Beat Ahead, a completely different field to this time last year, when all they could do was lose, already top of League Two and playing some good stuff. The next obstacle in their way was Spartans at Balmoor. That one, though, finished 1-0 to Spartans. Disappointing given Beat Ahead's start to the season, Andrew.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise, I must admit. I thought that Beat Ahead would be too strong for the new boys, but a goal in the 61st minute from Jamie Dishington was the difference between the sides. I think Kieran Shanks, who was suspended, would have been missed in attack. But they're only a point off the top of the table. There's four teams on 8 points, including Stranraer, who had to rely on a 97th-minute Ollie McDonald winner against Clyde. So we always talk about these lower leagues being really tight, but the stats are there to tell you that, that they are indeed difficult to predict and difficult for sides to pull themselves out of, but it'll be a wee setback for Peterhead. Let's hope it's not a terminal setback.
Yeah, next weekend, Peterhead away to Stranraer. They'd be as well setting off now. How do you see that going?
Well, as you say, it's a long, long journey. Even if you're Glasgow-based, you've still got that A77 to go down, which is a nightmare of a road. I think, as I mentioned, it took Stranraer until the 97th minute to beat Clyde. I think it'll be very tight again, and it's one of those games that first goal is going to be pivotal. So here's hoping that Peterhead can get it and get back up the road with a positive result, whether it's a win or a draw.
That's right. I think, do you reckon that's the longest journey in Scottish football just now, Peterhead to Stranraer?
Unless you drew, you know, Stranraer against Witt Academy in the cup.
Yeah, I suppose. Next weekend, Peterhead away to Stranraer, as I say. And in the Highland League, the clubs on Saturday facing up to each other in the GPH Builders Merchants Highland League Cup. First round, and the ties finished like this. Bankstaddy 2, Forest Mechanics 4, Brora Rangers 7, Clachnacoven 0, Bucky Thistle 4, Tariff United 0, Devonville 9, Devonville 0.
They wish. Yeah, yes. They wish.
Devonville 0, Fraserburgh 9, Fermanagh United 1, Brechin City 3, Keith 3, Nairn County 2, Lossiemouth 0, Strathspey Thistle 1, Rothes 2, Inverurie Locos 3. In the juniors, Dave.
It's quarter-final day in the Girl League Cup at the weekend. Finished Cooter 5, Longside 1, Dice 2, Isle of Ale 1, Rothrovers 0, Bridgeton Thistle 2, Stonehaven 7, Parkhead 0. And in the semi-finals, which will be played on the 16th of September, Stonehaven will play Cooter at home and Bridgeton Thistle will entertain Dice in the Premier League. Newmarket United 2, Fraserby United 5, Stonewood Park Vale 1, Mod 2, Nairn 2, Hermes 3, and Sunnybank 2, Ellen United 3. Despite the defeat, Sunnybank still remain top of the table at the moment. And in the Championship, Bankstaddy Juniors continued their good start to the season. They're top with 4 points after defeating Cruden Bay 4-1 away from home. This Saturday, it's the magic of the Scottish Junior Cup first round. About 3,000 teams going back. Not all our teams are some cracking ties. If you want to go and visit any locally, Bankery are home to Mabel from Ayrshire. That'll be a tough one. Bridgeton Thistle play Maryhill at Aberdeen Sports Village. We've got Rothy Rovers, their way to Cooper Angus. Cruden Bay against Stonywood Park Vale is obviously an all northeast one. Ellen United, they also play Downfield at home. That won't be an easy one. Shots Bonacord are up at Fraserburgh United. There's another all-northeast tie at Glentanner against Devon's side. Hermes, they are welcome Armadale Thistle to Lochside Park. Sunnybank go to Hurlford. Now that's going to be a job and a half for that one. Isle of Ale are at home to Greenock. Longside against Colony Park and Lossiemouth United against Hall Russell United. So we will have a few teams going through, apart from the ones that got byes as well. And then the one that never heard of this team before, I must do some research. White Hills, who are bottom of the Championship, along with Cruden Bay, they are at home to Caledonian Locomotive FC. So you would imagine they've got some connection with the railways, but I've never even, it was the first time I'd seen their name. So they're, as far as I'm concerned, they might, must have been, either a new club or a club that's changed their name, but I would imagine there must be a new club. But yeah. I'll do some homework.
Good man.
Andrew, disappointed if I didn't.
And that is pretty much it for episode 89 of Pittodrick PS. Remember, we publish every Tuesday where we can, always looking back to the Dawn's previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could rate and review us, tell us what you think of the show too. We'd be very grateful. Thanks for checking out Pittodrick PS. We'll see you next time.